I'm very pleased to welcome to Fremantle Shipping News, Nellie Crawford. Welcome, Nellie.
Oh, thank you, Michael. It's nice to be here.
Well, it's lovely that you've accepted my invitation to come and talk. We've sort of been promising to do this for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you're not quite reclusive, but you're...
Yeah, I've wormed my way out of it for quite some time, so yeah, at last.
You're usually to be found, if people are searching for you, although they wouldn't find you easily, in your studio. Painting something like this, beautiful painting in front of us. I'll put this painting of yours up with this podcast so people can see your still life skill and an idea of what we are now talking about. But how would you describe this particular work of art, which I should say hangs in my dining room?
Yes. Like all my work, I aim for a sense of tranquility and balance and harmony. I always think that a painting's not so much about what style it is or what genre it is. It's more about how it makes you feel. And when I'm painting in my studio, I feel peaceful and tranquil. And I hope that my paintings do convey that sort of mood to people. Still life is still life, so bowls, fruit, flowers, interiors, that's the subject matter, but it's not as simple as that. The subject, when I paint, it's not just about painting what's in front of me or making something up. It's more about how am I feeling, how do I want this painting to feel.
There seems to be, to me, a couple of issues there, and I've always wondered about these things. You can have a skill like you've got, and we'll come back and talk about how you got into painting and other things you may have painted before you discovered this still life skill. It's absolutely beautiful, but the artist has to love what they're doing. Is it secondary, I'm asking, whether the viewer, the collector, me, also gets satisfaction?
In my mind, I'm always painting to please someone. In the meantime, I'm pleasing myself, because it's a little bit like meditation. You get lost in what you're doing. So that's a wonderful feeling. And it's a wonderful feeling to think that I can earn a living from something that I love doing, and it's like meditation. But there would be no point in me doing it if other people didn't look at it. I'd have a house full of paintings that no one would ever see. So it gives me a great deal of pleasure that people buy my painting, that you've bought this one, and you're willing to actually put it on your wall. I mean, that gives me a real buzz to think that's what happens to my paintings. And people say, oh, why haven't you got any of your paintings in the house, which I don't have?
Probably all been sold.
I say I can't afford them, but no, that's not true. I just like the idea that someone else is enjoying them, you know,
Must be lovely to see your work being hung in these ways, a real recognition of your talent.
Yeah. I don't often meet people who've actually purchased my paintings. I work through galleries. I don't sell privately. So I don't have these sorts of conversations with people who actually, like you, have a painting in front of them.
Bought at a gallery.
Yes, bought at a gallery, that's right. So I don't often see them in situ. I might see photographs of them in someone's house, but exhibition opens frighten me a bit. I get very, very stressed and nervous before an exhibition. But the nice thing about it is you actually see your 6 months' work or whatever it is hanging on the walls and hanging together. And then, of course, as you know, my husband Bob does the framing. So it's sort of, they go together. The paintings and the frames go together. And to see them all hanging, big ones, small ones, with a connecting thread going through them, it's wonderful.
Some bigger, some smaller. And again, the listener can look at Bob's frame in this photograph.
Yeah, they're all handmade frames.
Beautifully done. Tell me, and perhaps you've already answered it, indirectly. But here in this painting, we've got apricots. Are they apricots?
I think so.
I think they are.
Yes, they're apricots.
If they're not, let's
they're
agree.
They're apricots. Let's agree. I don't often know the names of things, so like...
Well, that was going to be my question. I mean, as it turns out, and I can't remember why I bought this at the exhibition, but I loved it. I bought it because I loved it as a whole.
Yeah.
It may have been because apricots are actually my super favourite fruit.
Uh-huh.
May have been, but I don't think so. I just love the painting.
Yeah.
But do you look for colour? How do you decide what the setting is going to be? Do you play around with objects?
Oh, I play around all the time. I've changed. My method of working has changed over the years. At first, I would put everything in front of me and rearrange until I got exactly the composition I wanted, and then I'd paint what was in front of me. But now, I don't know how long I've been doing this for, 25 years, I suppose. Now I might get an inspiration for, say, apricots, you know, in Galati's looking nice and fresh. And I think I'll do apricots, and I'll get the apricots, and then I won't spend a lot of time setting up the still life. I'll just get maybe a bowl or a dish or something and put it somewhere and put the two together to see if it works as a composition, see if the colours work as a composition. And I change it as I go. I don't think I actually possess that vase or cup or whatever it is. Yes, that vase that's in the painting. It's probably an adaptation of something that I had in front of me at the time. So nowadays I make a lot of stuff up, and simply to get a better painting.
You want the dimensions to be right.
Yeah, balance is really, to me, balance is really, really important. There's something that tells me, that satisfies me when it all fits together, and I might have to add another apricot there that's not there, or look in the mirror. I've got, because my studio is very small, I can't stand back far enough to get a sense of what I'm doing. So I've got a little hand mirror, and I look in the mirror and I look at the painting to see if it's got that balance. Because also you're looking at it the wrong way around, so it's like you're looking at it freshly. And the same when I do my signature, I look in the mirror and I see where do I put my signature to make it more balanced, you know? So
well,
it's all about that harmony and tranquility and...
It was just a couple of years ago before, I mean, we say a couple of years ago, was it before the COVID era or not? This was before the COVID era, I believe. My daughter telephoned me. She was either in Bali or about to get on a plane and go. She said, "Dad, I've just got a notification of an art auction through a well-known art auctioneers in Perth, and there's some Nellie Crawford's in it. Do you know Nellie Crawford's work?" And I said, "Well, perchance I do." She said, "Well, Dad, I want you to go and bid on my behalf." And I went along, and it was an amazing day. I finished up buying a few other things.
But I also
bought the Nellie Crawford, and there was great competition between me on behalf of my daughter and this other person. And I think you actually sold the day out. It was astonishing. But there's something, people just love it, and it's all about the peace and tranquility, I think, isn't it?
Yes, and often people, I say that about my own work, that's how I feel, and that's, I'm not railing against the world or trying to change anything or making statements with this. It's the mood that I'm trying to create, and it's the mood that I have, and it's just a little bit of tranquility. It's what I see every day around me, what people see every day around them, and it's just an expression of that, you know, the beauty that you can see in everyday things, the light shining in the window and highlighting that little bowl or that lemon or all those things that you sort of overlook. There's a book about still life called Looking at the Overlooked. That's sort of the Bible for still life, and that's what it said. Still life is a sort of overlooked genre because is sort of on the sidelines.
It also reveals a painter's painterly skills, doesn't it?
It does, because, well, composition, I always, if I get a painting wrong, it's usually because of the composition, and that's, to me, so important, composition, but then all the other things like perspective and you know, colour theory and balance of colours.
Everything that makes a beautiful painting. Well, let's try and answer some questions that those listening will want to know. I think you came to Australia when you were much younger, is
yes,
that right?
Yes, yeah. We came, my father had a sugar beet farm in Suffolk. And at the age of 60, he was quite old, my father. At the age of 60, he decided he'd up sticks and come and farm in Australia. He bought a place in between Manjimup and Bridgetown in the bush, in the state forest, actually. It was 90 acres. And of course, he was pretty naive. You can't farm, not like England, you can't farm.
It wasn't Suffolk. 90,
it wasn't Suffolk, that's right. And so he went to work in the timber mill at the age of 60. I think he must have put his age down. And there we were.
How old were you when all this happened?
I was 4 when we came out. We stayed with an uncle for a while. I must have been 5 or 6 when I first went to this house, just a weatherboard asbestos shack, really. There were 7 of us. And it was hot in summer, cold in winter. But looking back, it was the ideal environment for a still life artist because we had the bush, we had the banksias and boronia and all the flowers that I used to paint. And we had the rustic buckets and flowers in the garden and fruit and, you know, apricots and apples and olives. We had fresh eggs, you know, collected and put in a... So everything, I think that still influences me today.
It's all in your mind. The fresh eggs, they appear from time to time.
Yeah, so, I mean, I wasn't talented as an artist, or wasn't talented at all. I couldn't draw when I was a child, when I was growing up.
So where did that come from? Were your mother and
father
artistic?
No, well, I studied art at high school. And I was the worst in the class. Everyone tells me I was, all my friends, whenever we meet up. But you were the worst at art in the class. And the art teacher must have seen something in me because she actually persevered with me. And I can always remember her sitting me down and making me look at things and thinking about perspective and colours. And so I started to love it. That was very happy experiences when I did my art homework. I did it right up until I left school. We had no electricity, so I'd be sitting at the table with the lamp, you know, with kerosene lamp, doing my art homework. And maybe something about the soft lamp light or something had something to do with it as well. But I remember distinctly enjoying those times and that peacefulness that you get when you're absorbed in something.
Which is a beautiful thing. You need then to have the skill or to develop the skill, and you need people not only to take that interest that the teacher did, seeing something in you and trying to convey something she'd learnt to you, but what about the techniques? Did you have people? Did you read things? How did you get it?
Well, the techniques, probably the basic techniques I did get through doing art.
And just doing it.
I did the final, studying art at school and doing the final exam. That was the core of everything I know about perspective and balance and stuff like that, and colour theory. But I never thought about being an artist when I left school. Everyone, girls anyway, seemed to be teachers or nurses. So I went teaching 10 years in primary school, or 12 years in primary schools, and then another 10 or so at TAFE, teaching English. And I was interested in art. I did the odd course, and I remember someone gave me Drawing on the Right Side of Your Brain when I was sort of in my 20s, and I loved doing it. And then I went to, I was working on Christmas Island in 1990. And there was a woman there called Jane Moore who was commissioned to do the Christmas Island stamps, because Christmas Island's famous for its stamps. And we'd go out in the jungle and we'd sketch, and the mine, the phosphate mine there had closed down. So there were a lot of abandoned mine buildings sort of being overtaken by the jungle. And there was lots of interesting things to sketch and to draw. And I think she inspired me in the sense that she was making a living, or sort of making a living, I think, out of doing art.
If you asked what she did, she was an artist.
And she was an artist. I think that's really when I thought, well, maybe I could do this. Mm. And so when I came back to Perth, I did every course under the sun. I went to Fremantle Arts Centre. I did every one of Peter Walker's courses. I did acrylic painting. I did charcoal. I did fabric painting. I did everything. Watercolour. And it was oils that took my interest. And it still is oils.
Do you paint in anything else these days?
Apart from still life or apart from oils?
Well, apart from oils and still life.
No, well...
You don't have time?
I've had back-to-back exhibitions. I've promised myself that I would never, ever do three exhibitions in a year, but
this is
guess
the year?
What? I've got three. I had one in the UK earlier in the year, I don't know, April, I suppose. That was great. That went really well. I didn't go over, of course.
Not in this time.
Not at this time. So that went really well, and I'm having another one there next year. Then I had one down at Yarlinga Galleries. That was soon after, so I was working for those two exhibitions. And now I've got this Gallows one coming up in September. So I haven't stopped, and before that I had an exhibition before UK.
You're always having an exhibition.
Yeah, so it's not even that I want to. I mean, I have done landscapes and portraits and things before. Not very well. And because I've invested so much time and energy into oils, and because I love oils and there's so much to learn just with oils, there's so much to learn just with still life, that I'll need an infinite amount of time just to get to the bottom of all that. So I just think, oh.
What a lovely journey. So you go to Christmas Island, you get inspired to think that I can just be an artist, and how soon after that do you make the break?
Yeah.
And how soon after making the break does the things start to happen? And how does that happen?
Oh yeah, that's I probably by the mid 90s I knew that I was doing fabric painting actually. I'd done a course at Fremantle Arts Centre, and I was painting tablecloths and cushion covers, and they were very popular. And then I put my toe in the water. I had leave without pay for about 3 months. No, 6 months. And I thought, I'll just try and see if I can make some money. And I think I earned about $5,000. So I thought, well, it's only a start, but I can probably do better than this. And then I gradually realised that painting tablecloths and useful things, people aren't going to pay enough money for you to make a living from it.
Cottage industry.
Yeah, that's you're not going to... I couldn't, you know, take me a week to paint a tablecloth, say. Oh. And if I got $200 from it, I did the sums. There's no way I could give up my day job.
$40 a day or less.
So, and at the same time I was doing some oil paintings as well, and I realised that because the galleries took my tablecloths and cushion covers and whatever else I did on fabric, and then I think Rob Malcolm at Yelling Up Galleries, I had an interview, and it was in the West Australian, I think, and it was about my fabric painting, but in the background behind me was one of my oil paintings, and Rob Malcolm from Yelling Up Galleries rang up and said, why haven't we got any of your oil painting, so that's how it started.
The overlooked bit.
Yeah, the overlooked, that's right. And
So you had an exhibition at Yelling Up first?
No, exhibitions to start with. I entered into competitions just to see my work hanging on the wall, because I think a lot of people who maybe want to be visual artists worry about exposing their work to the, you know, critical gaze of everybody that comes in. And so that sort of put my toe in the water by entering competitions, and you actually see it hanging on the wall. And then you got over that once you see it hanging. And
people like it.
People aren't rude to you. That's the good thing about... Oh, it's a ship, isn't it?
Oh, I think it's the train going past us in Fremantle. Totally authentically Fremantle.
It is, yeah. Yeah.
So
no one's rude enough. I've never had anyone say, this is rubbish. But so, I mean, they might think it, but they don't tell me. And people say lovely things, and which is nice. It's encouraging.
Well it is lovely. My father used to dabble with watercolours, and they're all quite nice, and people would commission him, and they would say, could you paint it, but I want this to be this colour and that to go that colour, because it has to fit with the green drapes in the lounge room. Do you ever run into that?
I don't do commissions. For that reason, I get very stressed. If someone wants me to paint a particular vase that they've got in their family or something like that, I can't, because I don't know what it is that they've got in their mind. And I think, it takes me a lot longer to do a painting that someone's asked me to do. And then I worry that they'll, because they're nice people, they'll buy it even though they don't like it. And I just don't like that feeling. I think if I paint a painting, the gallery takes it and put it on the wall, I won't be forcing anyone into buying something that they don't want, you know.
I always felt for the portraitist who gets to do it. Everybody comes in and says, that's not a photograph, and I don't think their nose turns to the left like that. And what's that left funny eye?
I know. I could never be a portrait painter. Oh, no. No, because people obviously don't see them, or they have an image in their mind of what they look like, I think.
You mentioned earlier living in the southwest and in a home that had, I think you said, seven. Did any of your siblings have the same school as you? Did they?
Well, there was no interest in my family, and I think my mother probably said to me lots of times, you know, I can't draw a straight line, and so. Similarly, I couldn't draw a straight line. No, but then saying that, my mother used to love painting the walls of the house, and she liked to knit and make things. And I suppose that that can't draw thing is. Simply because people haven't been exposed to it or not practiced enough. I believe that, some people seem to have a natural talent, but I think it's not impossible to cultivate a skill in something.
But you, from everything you've said, were also, maybe driven is not the right word, I think it probably is, when you were at high school and finishing. You wanted to do this, you got satisfaction, you had a teacher who was recognising things, so you can't just be that. Do you think that everybody has an ability to do something along the lines of what you've done?
If you're obsessed by it,
if
you really, really love something and want to do it, I suppose it's the same for musicians. If you really love music, you you just keep going and going and trying and trying and trying until you achieve something. I think that's the case with me. I always loved looking at art, and I always admired people who could, you know, at school you had your talented students who could just make things look really, really beautiful. And I think if you try hard enough or keep going and practice, you can get a certain level of skill. Whether you'll ever be as good as someone who's got a natural talent or not, I don't know, but I'm a great believer in hard work. I, as a still life artist, I admire Margaret Olley's work ethic. She's dead now, but she just painted and painted and painted just about every day of her life, I think. And she didn't worry about trends or what anyone else was doing. She just did it. She kept doing it and doing it and doing it. And of course, her work is lovely. It's beautiful work. It's very joyous and colourful and bright. And
now, I'm thinking that there's a story which may not be apocryphal, but ordinarily you paint with your right hand, don't you?
Yeah, I'm right-handed, yeah.
Was there a period where you injured your... You know where this is going. Was there a period where you injured your right arm?
I did.
What happened and what did you do with your left hand?
I was so stupid, I don't even like talking about it. I had an accident. I had a bike accident. It wasn't really my fault. But anyway, I went over the handlebars and broke my arm. And I was in the middle of preparing for an exhibition and I thought, I'll just have to use my left hand. And funnily enough, a couple of years prior to that, I'd suddenly decided that I wanted to write with my left hand. So, for no reason, I don't know why I decided that.
Wanted to be ambidextrous.
Yeah, I don't know. I might have read a book about Leonardo da Vinci or someone who was ambidextrous. Anyway, I started writing with my left hand. It didn't last long because I'm not very good at it. And I thought, well, I'll just have to use my left hand to get this exhibition because it had to be ready and I didn't want
to get it
cancel.
Done.
And
disciplined.
Yes, so I did it, and I was much slower. I'm a right-handed person, so it was a very slow process.
But hang on, slow down. The listener's saying, hang on, just get Nellie to explain this. You painted with your left hand, even though you'd always painted with your right hand.
Mm.
You were able to do that
and
do it really, as far as I've been able to detect, with the same dexterity. The same fineness, the
even
same brush
when
strokes.
I looked, at the end, when I had half of them finished, or in the end, I'd done half, I think, with my right hand, and then I'd done another half with my left hand, and I was battling to tell the difference. The difference was that it did take me a lot longer
to do.
I mean, and people do paint with their mouth. They paint with,
their
I think
feet.
Once you know what, yeah, that's right. Once you know what you do, it's just difficult to control.
The brain's telling you what's going on the canvas, presumably.
Mm.
Normally you're doing it with your right hand and fingers. Yeah. Suddenly you're doing it with your left.
I still want the same effect. So I think my brain was knowing what I wanted to achieve, but it's just that with my left hand it was more difficult. But that wasn't the end of the story, because the following year I got back on the bike too soon, and this was my fault this time. I fell and broke my shoulder, and then it was a similar situation. So I know that it happens again.
I think you were just trying to show off.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I don't ride a bike anymore.
There is an age at which one probably shouldn't ride a bike, and certainly an electric bike.
Oh no, I don't want to have any more broken bones, so I walk everywhere now.
Now, there's something else I have to ask you about. I was visiting a second cousin in England not so many years ago, and they live in Oxfordshire, and we were pottering around the place. And I said, we must take you to what we think is one of the prettiest villages in Oxfordshire, a place called Broadway.
Yeah.
Do you know Broadway?
Broadway, yeah.
How do you know Broadway?
I know Broadway because when we were in the UK, 20 years ago, it must have been more, 20, I don't know. I think Bob, my husband, showed the gallery owner some photos of my work, and
this is in Broadway.
This is in Broadway, and actually we'd just come back from Greece. We'd been in Greece for a couple of months, I think, and I'd been painting there, so I had some paintings with me in England, because we went to England so Bob could see his family and so on, and. We had a house swap, actually, in Broadway. So he showed the gallery owner some photos, and she said, we'll give them a go. And then she gave them a go, and since then I've been...
Your paintings were then hung there?
Yeah, they were hung.
They sold?
Yeah. That's where I had the UK exhibition. I've had every 2 or 3 years I have an exhibition there.
Mm.
But that same trip, I think would have been, I went to Lavenham, which was the village near where, in Suffolk, where I was born. And there was a little gallery there, and he took some of my work as well. And he said, look, I'm going to do some paperwork. You just have a wander around the village and come back and, you know, we'll talk it over. Anyway, I came back and he'd sold, there were three, he'd sold, he'd sold them all. And then that was
it
really
wasn't
good.
A terrible...
It was a lovely connection.
Yes.
I don't know how he sold them. He probably convinced someone that I was a Suffolk born and bred and come back here. I don't know how it happened.
No, you were a brilliant
unfortunately
Australian
he's died,
painter.
But,
and
but yeah, it was that was when my works were pretty
cheap. So where else
cheap.
Exotically have you exhibited your work?
I had a wonderful exhibition in Singapore. I don't deal with that gallery anymore. It was too difficult, but it was a fantastic exhibition.
Yes.
And a beautiful location. And and actually, the gallery owner paid for the accommodation, which is unusual.
Well, he was obviously very keen to have you exhibit there.
Yeah,
what was it that he saw and thought that his clients would see?
Well, he wasn't Singaporean. He was British. He used to be a banker, and he was holidaying in. I don't know, Fremantle, down south or somewhere, and he'd seen my work in Yalling Up. He came and tracked me down to my studio, and he said, I'll buy everything you've got in the room. And I said, no, you won't, because I don't sell my paintings like that, because he can take it back, well, this is my thinking, he could take it back to Singapore and charge a lot more or a lot less than I want him to charge.
You have to keep control.
I have to keep control. Still life artist,
yes.
Control freak, you know, you control what's in front of you. So, anyway, he offered me this exhibition, which it was great. It was a great experience, but I don't exhibit there, but or in France. I had an exhibition in Avignon.
Tell us what happened in Avignon.
Yeah, that was an artist-run gallery, a bit like here, Art Source, I suppose, but at each of the artists took a turn in managing the art gallery. And they had, I showed them what I did and told them what I did. And they had a board meeting and they offered me an exhibition there just before the Avignon Festival. So that was really
nice
an experience.
A
and I,
thrill.
Yeah. And Bob and I actually ran the gallery for a couple of days as well, you know, because it was a cooperative and the artists worked in the gallery. So that was great.
It's a bit like an Australian winemaker going to the south of France and making wine. You go to the
right.
south of France.
I did feel a bit of a fraud, I must admit.
Oh, not at all.
Yeah, but...
Have you studied, and I get the impression the answer to this is yes, but the old time still life painters, whether they're from the Dutch school or...
I have my favourites. Chardin, who he painted in the 1700s, very intimate works and beautiful colours, soft colours. Cézanne, I like, mainly because I went to his studio when I was in France one time, and it was just like he'd stepped out for a cigarette or pipe or whatever he did. That was lovely, and that was a wonderful experience. But in Australia, of course, Margaret Olley.
Yes.
But the old Dutch still life artists, you know, the ones with the rabbits and blood coming out and the dead fish and the I'm not that fond of those. They often have a skull or something in them as well to remind you that life is impermanent.
They're telling some story, aren't they?
Yeah,
yes.
they're showing off the client's wealth by having all these wonderful animal, you know, game and vegetables and fruit and
trinkets,
and also often a skull to remind you that you're not going to be here much longer.
We'll know what's going on when you see a skull in one of your still lives.
Yeah, that's right. Well, yeah. As someone reminded me recently, still in still life actually means dead. And in Spanish, it's la naturaleza muerta, which is dead life. And in in French it's la nature morte, which is also dead life. So I don't tell people that, it might put them off. But
Have you painted in Spain? Because I know you love your
Spanish.
I want to. Is there a place you want to go?
Well, we went to San Sebastian for a little while, one time when I was having an exhibition in England. And we liked that. That's Basque country. So they do speak another language as well. I have no idea. I've got this exhibition coming up in England next year, and if all goes well, we'll go. But rather than spend all my time in England, I'd like to go to Spain. I'd love to be able to paint in Spain, but I don't know.
Can I ask you this question about painting? I had a great grandfather who was quite a good painter.
I've seen his work. It's beautiful.
And a big question, he came here when he was 55, and there was a retrospective back, I don't know, in the 80s. And the question by the curator was, what effect did the Australian light have on his particular English sensibilities, both Yorkshire and Devon and the light and so on? When you paint in different places, like painting in Avignon or other places you've been, do you find yourself painting differently, even though you're painting still life?
Yeah. I think when you're in a different place, your mind changes as well. You know, it's not just the light, but a different atmosphere, a different way of looking at things. And I think it does, and it affects me. It does affect me, because I've painted in England as well. So it's a softer light, I think, in England. It's just, well, it's much softer light. And a bit like when I painted down in Yanmar, you know, the place where we grew up, somehow I think it was a softer light down there too. I just like the idea of going somewhere else and opening up your mind to new possibilities. And I think, it probably does affect you. Though some people say my work looks a little bit English, I suppose. And maybe it does, I don't know. Why do they say that?
Because they might know you were born in England.
True. But like, I paint a lot of lavender paintings, which I think people associate maybe. It's not a native flower.
South of France is.
South of France too. So. I don't know what influences me.
Well, often people look at paintings too, I think, and it reminds them of
something. It could do.
Tell me this about your work habits. Do you paint every day? Do you get up with the break of dawn? Do you wait till you've had breakfast? What's your practice?
I get up early. I'm up by 6 o'clock, or in summer earlier. I go for a long walk. I have a cup of coffee, and while I have my coffee, I do Duolingo. I've done it. My husband, Bob, said, don't tell anyone this, but I've done it for 1,024 days straight. So Duolingo, they keep a record of how many days without a break. So anyway, that just shows you how obsessive I am. I do Duolingo while I have my morning coffee. Then I go back and I try and start work by 7:30, 8 o'clock every day. Oh, not the weekend, so I don't work on the weekend. And yeah, I don't have a break. I mean, I have a break at 10 or 10:30 and have another go over the road to TLC and have another coffee. Then go back, take Bob's lunch down to him in his studio where he frames, and then go back and do at least 2 hours in the afternoon. If I'm preparing for an exhibition, I might work till 4 or 5 o'clock. But most days I try and finish by about 3.
Do you have a break once the exhibition has come? Do you, like a footballer, do you have an off season?
I haven't been lately because it's been seamless. And it's been good actually. I've been working really well, and it's great because I haven't had a break. I just keep going and going and going. But after this one, probably after this gallows one, I might have a break, I think. couple of days.
You might have to find yourself swapping from right arm to left arm just to keep the production coming, or maybe two arms at once.
Yeah. Well, I'll be. I mean, the thing is, there always is another exhibition on the horizon, so I sort of start thinking about it. And but I mean, it's great. I love it. It's not a chore. I mean, it's a challenge.
Now, if we consider all of the paintings, children. Do you have a favourite child?
Yeah, it's always the one I'm working on. It's always the one I'm working on. I don't know what that is, but the one I've just finished, I think, well, that's really good. This one, and then I just have to start another one. So, I don't. I suppose if by magic I could see them all in front of me now, all the ones I've done, I might be able to pick one out. But I don't. No, I don't look at them as children. I don't look at them like that. They're on their own. Once they're painted, they're off. You know, they're not nothing to do with me after that. It's up to the whoever's got them hanging on the wall. That's their responsibility after that.
Do you have any? How do I put this? Ambitions in the art world left? Are you wanting to exhibit in the Red Square? Is there some genre you want to pursue? Is there something? Is there something left?
Well, I always have goals, and they change. I would like to paint in Spain. I mean, it might be an impossibility, money wise. COVID-wise, Ukraine-wise, whatever, it might not be possible. But I would like to work in a country where Spanish is spoken as a first language and really improve my Spanish at the same time. But I'm quite happy to just keep painting and painting and painting until I fall off my bike again or something, I don't know.
Until the skull is placed on the still life table.
<That's right. laughs> Exactly, yeah.
Nellie, on that very optimistic note, thank you for joining with Shipping News and talking about it. It's been absolutely delightful.
Thank you for conversing with me.
And good luck with your next exhibition.
Oh, thank you.